I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Michael. It's great to be here.
So much going on in the world. Will Donald Trump have to do the perp walk? Will he be taken down Fifth Avenue in New York with handcuffs on and an orange suit? What's going on in New South Wales? There's an election about to happen. In Germany, the EU wants to ban the internal combustion engine. It'll just be electric cars. The German government might collapse all around it. Lydia Thorpe seemed to be fairly rough handled by a policeman yesterday. The Attorney General of the Commonwealth has asked for a report into it all. The Greens and the government, they're sort of standing off over climate policy. Who's going to be thrown to the sharks? What's going to happen? And the big news, of course, this week was the question and the alteration to the Constitution to enable a voice to Parliament and the executive has been announced. We can't cover all of those, Martin, but what about Donald Trump? Colour and movement in politics, what is it?
Well, he's tried to get out on the front foot and say he will be indicted, and he's offered a sort of call to arms, you know, his supporters to come out en masse. So if he's trying to set the scene. Of course, he's portraying himself as a political victim in all of this, that this is a politically motivated investigation, and it's partisan, and it's out to get him. And he kind of needs something like this because his presidential campaign's been somewhat flagging, and there's been a reluctance of a lot of Republican heavyweights and other figures in the party to back him. But, you know, if he's seen as like the victim and he changes the political narrative, it might again put him center stage. So watch that space. Of course, it's got nothing to do with politics. It's about him allegedly paying hush money to a former stripper, I don't know if I say porn star or whatever, who he had allegedly had an affair with, and covered it up. So that's what the whole case is about. It's not about what he did or didn't do in politics. But, you know, the professional and the personal in America, political and the personal overlap, don't they?
It seems so. And Trump has sort of brought the blur right out into the open. The Republicans have been using it as an opportunity to get their supporters to give them lots of money so that they can get ready for the next set of elections. Anyway, we'll watch that with interest. I mentioned what appears to be a standoff between the Greens in Canberra and the government. What do you reckon is going to happen?
I think we've addressed this once before. I think there's something for both parties in differentiating themselves and eventually coming together to have an agreement. So the Greens want to emphasise that the building of new gas and oil projects, coal projects, should be banned, and effective action on climate change can't continue without it. The government doesn't want to go that far. They see a transition period as really critical. It's one of those seminal things, Michael, where you've got a centre-left party versus a further-left party, and then trying to scope out their space in the political spectrum. I think in the end, they'll strike a deal because the choice is that we don't get climate change legislation passed like this. And so I think they have to.
Martin, the New South Wales elections are on. They seem to have been a slow burn, coming. And from everything one reads, it's going to be close. Perhaps no one will have control of the upper house. Will Mark Latham be a factor, for goodness sake? What's going to happen? What looks like happening? What are the polls telling us?
The polls telling us it's very close, perhaps with Labor in front, not by a huge margin. And there's, for your listeners, there's a big crossbench already in the New South Wales Parliament, and perhaps some potential, it's a bit hard to say, to see it expanded. So you've got 12 MPs in a 93-member chamber. That's a big number that are already on the crossbench, either Greens or Independents. So if you had that number continue or expanded, that obviously increases the possibility of a hung parliament in a close election. So Labor may finish in front. They're coming from a fair way back themselves. But if they finished in front, they might be positioned to form government. And obviously the Greens, who currently have three members in that chamber, would probably support them. But a minority government is a very real possibility here, and it's looking like a very close election. And the coalition government there, Liberal National Government, has been there for 12 years, so it's a substantial period of time. But the Premier's only been there, Dom Perrottet, for 18 months. I don't know how many of you follow New South Wales politics, but no one served a full term there since Bob Carr, going back quite a few years. And it's had a lot of turbulence, a lot of corruption inquiries. In fact, the rather popular Gladys Berejiklian was unseated by a corruption inquiry into her former lover and her decisions that she made that affected him and his electorate. So it's been a lively and entertaining backdrop to this. The campaign itself has been fairly civil between the two main parties, but New South Wales is a fairly complicated electoral scene with seats that are winnable or swing seats in throughout the metro area and in a lot of regional areas as well. So there's spots to watch everywhere. I'll be going over there. Michael, I'm looking forward to settling in with some good friends and watching the action unfold on Saturday night.
Well, we'll expect a first-hand account in View from the Roundhouse next week. Martin, right down to the last important seat won by whoever. As I said a bit earlier, Martin, the big voice question has now come front and centre. This week, the Prime Minister, quite emotionally in Canberra, backed by all the people who've been on the inner circle, both Indigenous and otherwise, announced the question that will be going to the referendum and what the precise words of the alteration will be. And the words, of course, to the alteration are very important because they appear to help to settle what some of the disputation was all about. The question that's been posed, as I'm sure most people will know, and they'll see the article, The Voice Question and the Constitutional Alteration on Fremantle Shipping News, where we've also asked ChatGPT to tell us why we should vote yes and why we should vote no. Very interesting. The ChatGPT was very thoughtful about not expressing too many political opinions. But the question is a proposed law to alter the Constitution to recognise the First Peoples of Australia by establishing an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice. Do you approve this proposed alteration? You just have to say yes or no. But of course, the particular alteration to go in is important. What are you making of the political dance so far from the government, the opposition, the minor parties, the parties as they're represented in the state, in Western Australia? We've got the Nationals saying a little time ago that they would support it, but now you sort of hear ambivalent words from the current leader, ditto with the Liberal Party around the country. What do you think is going to happen?
The developments this week were quite interesting. Probably one thing extra to add there, that the machinery of government aspect to the referendum got passed as well.
Yes.
And what that means is they've agreed on how to run the referendum, which is something I also take an interest in, and the running of elections and referenda, Michael. So all of that's a really interesting development. So what we've got is both the question and the words in the Constitution that would go into the Constitution that have been tinkered with in conjunction with the referendum working group, which has been working closely with the government. That's in part an attempt to try to have a broader way of understanding or defining what the voice is and what it would do. There was feedback from the coalition. The coalition's still saying that they want more detail. So it hasn't succeeded in drawing them into a clear position at this stage. As we were saying before, that's going to have to come sooner or later. So they won't be able to sit on the fence forever. Likewise, there might be still more detail coming from the government about things like, you know, how many people might sit in the voice, where they might be drawn from, how that representation across the country might be managed, all of those sorts of things might still come. Bear in mind, we've got until the second half of this year, but it's also, we're starting to see the actual campaigns for and against starting to ramp up now. couple of things on the way the referendum's going to be held. There will be official leaflets outlining the for and against case, probably just short one pages that will be sent to people so that that argument is made clear. Is that working out exactly who writes these and submits these is often a bit complex because
Chat GPT.
well, you never know, never know. Well, apparently they're pretty good. So my students tell me at writing answers to things. I've never tried it myself, Michael. I know you have. So it's very interesting. But if you've got different no groups, for instance, who's entitled to write that piece? If you've got different yes groups, who's entitled to write that piece? So there's a bit of detail to work that through. There won't be an official funding of the yes and no campaign. And I think in this instance, that makes a lot of sense because there is actually funding that's been raised on both sides to campaign on this. And then that tricky and thorny issue about how much you fund different campaigns and how that's funded, et cetera, would have to be addressed. So there's a lot of information that's come out just this last week. It's really interesting to watch. And it'll no doubt shape how that narrative around the referendum's discussed.
Martin, you've mentioned the question of detail, and you say you believe it'll keep coming as we go along. What are the main areas? You've mentioned the questions of how people get to be on The Voice. Is that probably the most significant detail that people want?
I think that's one of them. One of them is how are they chosen? If they're elected, how they're elected, things like that, and representation across the country and how that's created and maintained. Another one would be what they advise on. So they advise on all matters of impacting on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Is there still, nevertheless, a scope there? Where's that sort of start and stop? So they might be keen to define that a little bit more clearly, for instance. That would be defined in legislation, but so it's not technically part of a constitution question or referendum, but people always like knowing what they're voting for. So there might be more discussion around scope and around the method of election or choosing.
Certainly, there have been two of the issues thrown around in the public arena. This idea that the ability to give advice, make representations to the parliament and the executive, which is the words that would go into the constitution, aren't the words of a veto. But people do want to have a sense about what matters they might be. At the same time, one would think that you can't be absolutely predictive. You never know what particular matters in what area are going to come up that obviously affect Indigenous people in Australia. The question of how people are selected or what electoral system you have is a fascinating one. In Australia, since Mabo and since the Native Title Act, there are now many, many native title bodies that represent Aboriginal people around the country, quite a large number. And you could think that the native title system provides some sort of at least initial way of thinking about how Indigenous people in Australia might be organised for the purpose of selecting their own representatives to the Voice. But I guess we might never get the final answers to those questions because that's the role of Parliament in the end of the day to pass the legislation, is it not?
It is. So Parliament will have the right to pass legislation to shape it and also to reshape it in future, especially if you look at the question and then if you look at the words inserted in the Constitution, it only talks about there being an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice that advises government and executive government and Parliament. It doesn't say, oh, it says what matters impacting on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but it doesn't actually define much more than that. So it does give government Parliament scope. It's more around probably reassuring people around what this is and what the focus is, that I think that's where the government will be releasing more information. You mentioned there the native title process. I think that's a really interesting yardstick there because this is probably not going to work just on straight numbers because you've got some larger groups and some smaller groups, but the representation for those smaller groups is still very, very important.
It's going to be
And
very
trying to
interesting to watch. You've had bodies like the Kimberley Land Council, which have been a primary mover in Indigenous land rights way back in the 80s, large organisation representing many different, what might be called tribal groups within it. There's all sorts of experience in the Indigenous world to start to build on, but I guess we will hear more about that as we proceed. The really interesting thing is for people who stop and look at the words that the Prime Minister published during the week. And when you look at the alteration, the first alteration is that there shall be a body to be called the Voice. The second is that the Voice may make representations to the Parliament and the Executive Government of the Commonwealth on matters relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So it's to make representations, not even in that sense to give advice. It's certainly not to tell them what to do, but to make representations. It goes very much to what sorts of legal obligations fall upon the Parliament or the executive when representations are made. Plainly, it's for them to consider them and in that sense, in policy terms, do with those representations what they think is appropriate. And the third one that you've alluded to is incredibly important. And this is, I think, the big change in the last wording. The Parliament shall, subject to this constitution, have power to make laws with respect to matters relating to the voice, including its composition, functions, powers, and procedures. It's not, for a start, limited to making laws about composition, functions, powers, and procedures, but that gives you an idea. And if you can make laws about the powers of the voice, well, that is highly significant. So, as you said, it's the power to shape and to reshape. One might
That's
discover
right.
in 10 years' time that the voting system that was initially set up needs to be modified to suit exigencies because all communities develop, evolve, and change. So there's great flexibility there, Martin.
There is, and I think that flexibility will be really important because the nature of representation changes over time as well. If you look at the history of democratic representation under the Western construct, it's gradually evolved from, first nobles, then landowners and wealthy landowners, then eventually the full male franchise, and eventually women. And Australia wasn't until much later Aboriginal people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people got a vote. So our concepts of representation have gradually evolved and changed. And I think that, representation here may well change as well, and you've got to have the flexibility to deal with that.
Was once 21 years of age, then 18. I think in New Zealand is contemplating 16.
That's right. The rules around prisoner voting have continued to change and ebb and flow, and etc. So, it is really a really interesting topic. As someone who sort of has the expertise more in the Western construct of democratic values and voting, I'm really interested to see how they come up with this mode of representation.
It's going to be fascinating, and it's a question of whether people, in a sense, are optimistic about the yes case, or they're so pessimistic they can't see themselves doing anything but vote no. What are the opinion polls telling us at the moment?
Our opinion polls are showing that there's overall people in favour of it, overall. So, but then where they actually land, is another thing. And what opinion polls don't always tell you is how soft or rusted on those positions are. So, it enjoys a healthy majority at the moment, and I guess we'll see how the political debate goes.
And we should remind our listeners today, of course, that to get a constitutional change successfully through a referendum, you need not only a majority of the people supporting that change, but you also need a majority of people in the various states supporting the change. So the whole of New South Wales can't sort of outvote the rest of the Commonwealth. You need a majority of states. Do we have any sense, Martin, that there's sort of an unequal distribution of sentiment in the various parts of the country?
You make a really interesting point because I haven't seen state-by-state polling. I've seen national polling on this, and the state-by-state polling could could be really interesting. Here, for instance, WA has traditionally been a state that's been less likely to embrace constitutional change, if you look at our voting patterns. I think that probably, you know, our state government would be very much behind it and supportive of it. And we do have a higher than the national average percentage of Indigenous people. It's around about 5%. So, you know, are they factors? It's curious. Yeah, the discrepancies between the states could be quite interesting.
Martin, we'll begin to draw this discussion to an end. The next sort of immediate few months coming along are going to be punctuated by significant discussions about The Voice. Fremantle Shipping News is an online magazine. Has stated that it's an organisation that is supporting the Yes case. And Fremantle Shipping News is also very pleased to be able to say that we've partnered with Notre Dame University here in Fremantle and are pleased to be bringing an event discussing The Voice on the 13th of April at 7 p.m, Martin, in Fremantle. It's going to be a very interesting, indeed exciting event.
Yes, so this is breaking news. Very exciting. The two of our organisations partnering to foster discussion not so much debate, more discussion around what the referendum means, what the different perspectives are around it, and we'll be seeking to bring a range of those perspectives on that evening to bear. And you might even see some of the panellists that come out of this podcast, Michael. You just never know.
You never know. You're like a big city. Well, Martin, it's been fabulous talking to you, and I see there've been a lot of Notre Dame students around the streets of Fremantle recently. What's been going on?
Well, semester's back; it's in full swing, and you know that sort of cloud of COVID. COVID hasn't gone away, but you know, with vaccination, etc., that's lifted and all those restrictions. And we've got a lot of students on the streets of Fremantle. So it's very exciting for Fremantle, particularly for the West End. And I think it adds a bit of life and energy, which is always what we want to see.
Well, Martin, keep up your own energy and look forward to seeing you next Friday morning.
Fantastic, Michael. And goodbye to the listeners.